Memories of this prep class might well be triggered in our dreams to light a lamp in the darkness of despair, particularly when a primary soulmate is lost in life. Jung said, dreams embody suppressed wishes and fears but may also give expression to inescapable truths which are not illusions or wild fantasies. Sometimes these truths are couched in metaphoric puzzles and represented as archetypal images during our dreams. Dream symbols are culturally generalized and dream glossaries are not immune to this prejudice. Each person should use their own intuition to delineate the meaning of a dream. The Australian Aborigines, a culture with over 10,000 years of unbroken history, believe that dream time is actually real time in terms of objective reality. A dream perception is often as real as an awake experience. To souls in the spirit world, time is always in the present, so regardless of how long they have been physically gone from your life, the person you love wants you to be aware they are still in now reality. How does a loving spirit go about helping you gain insight and acceptance of these things in your dreams? Case 5. My subject in this case has just died of pneumonia in New York City in 1935. She was a young woman in her early 30s who came to New York after growing up in a small Midwestern town. Sylvia's death was sudden and she wanted to provide some comfort to her widowed mother. Dr. N. Do you leave immediately for the spirit world after death? S. No, I do not. I must say goodbye to my mother, so I want to stay around Earth for a while until she gets the news. Dr. N. Is there anyone else you care to see before going to your mother? S. With hesitation, then in a husky voice, yes, I have an old boyfriend, his name is Phil. I go to his house first. Dr. N. Gently, I see. Were you in love with Phil? S. Pause. Yes, but we never married. I just want to touch him once more. I don't really make contact with him because he is sound asleep and not dreaming. I can't stay long because I want to reach my mother before she hears the news about me. Dr. N. Aren't you being a little too rushed with Phil? Why don't you wait for a proper dream cycle and leave a message? S. Firmly. Phil hasn't been part of my life for years. I gave myself to him when we were both young. He hardly thinks about me anymore, and, well, to pick up on me through a dream, he could miss the message anyway. My leaving traces of my energy is enough for now because we will be together again in the spirit world. Dr. N. After leaving Phil, do you go to your mother? S. Yes. I begin with more conventional thought, communication while she is awake, but I am getting nowhere. She is so sad. My mother's grief at not being at my bedside is overpowering her. Dr. N., what methods have you tried so far? S., I project my thoughts with an orange-yellow light, like the flame of a candle, and place my light around her head, sending loving thoughts. I'm not effective. She doesn't realize I am with her. I am going for a dream. Dr. N. All right, Sylvia, take me through this slowly. Please start by telling me if you pick out one of your mother's dreams or if you can create one of your own. S. I don't create dreams well yet. It is much easier for me to take one of hers so I can enter the dream to effect a more natural contact and then participate. I want her to know it is clearly me in the dream. Dr. N. Fine. Now take me through this process with you. S. The first couple of dreams are unsuitable. One is a muddle of absurdity. Another is a past life fragment, but without me in it. Finally, she has a dream where she is walking alone in the fields around my house. You should know she has no grief in this dream. I am not dead yet. Dr. N. What good is this dream, Sylvia, if you are not in it? S. Laughing at me, listen, aren't you seeing I'm going to smoothly place myself in the dream? Dr. N., you can alter the sequence of the dream to include yourself? S., sure, I enter the dream from the other end of the field by matching my energy patterns to my mother's thoughts. I project an image of myself as I was the last time she saw me. I come slowly across the field to let her get used to my presence. I wave and smile and then come to her. We hug each other and now I send waves of rejuvenating energy into her sleeping body. Dr. N., And what will this do for your mother? S. This picture is raised to a higher level of consciousness for my mother. I want to ensure a dream will stay with her after she wakes up. Dr. N. How can you be sure she won't think this is all a projection of her desire for you and discount the dream as not being real? S. The influence of a vivid dream like this is very great when my mother wakes up. Her mind has a vivid impression of this landscape with me and suspects I am with her. In time the memory is so real she is sure of it. Dr. N. Sylvia, does the image of the dream move from the unconscious to a conscious reality because of your energy transfer? S. Yes, it is a filtering process where I continue to send waves of energy into her over the next few days until she begins to accept my passing. I want her to believe I am still part of her and always will be. Turning back to Phil's sleep state, it was evident Sylvia did not intend to stay long to manifest her feelings within his unconscious mind. Dreams do not appear to occur in the deep delta stages of brainwave activity where there is no rapid eye movement. REM sleep, also known as paradoxical sleep, is a much lighter and therefore more active dream state occurring mostly in the early and late stages of sleep. In my next case, the dreamer will be reached between dreams presumably because he is still in REM sleep. The Dreamweaver souls I have come in contact with all engage in dream implanting, with two prominent differences. 1. Dream alteration. Here a skillful discarnate enters the mind of a sleeper and partially alters an existing dream already in progress. This technique I would call one of interlineation, where spirits place themselves as actors between the lines of an unfolding place so the dreamer is not aware of script tampering with the sequences. This is what Sylvia was doing with her mother. She was waiting for the right, sort of ongoing dream to enter and initiate a smooth fit. As difficult as this approach seems, it is evident to me the second procedure is more complex. 2. Dream origination. In these cases the soul must create and fully implant a new dream from scratch and weave the tapestry of these images into a meaningful presentation to suit their purpose. Creating or altering scenes in the mind of a dreamer is intended to convey a message. I see as this an act of service and love. If the dream implantation is not performed skillfully to make the dream meaningful, the sleeper moves on and wakes up in the morning remembering only disjointed fragments or nothing at all about the dream. To illustrate the therapeutic use of dream origination, I will cite the case of a Level V subject whose name was Bud in his last life. Bud was killed in a 1942 battle during World War II. The case involves a dreamer called Walt, who was Bud's surviving brother. Bud is adept at dream weaving, so after his battlefield death he returned home to the spirit world and made preparations for an effective method to comfort Walt. This is one of those cases that gave me greater perspective of the subtle integration methods dream weaver souls are able to use with sleeping people. During this condensed case, my subject will describe the dream techniques taught to him by his guide. Axner, Case 6. Dr. N., how do you plan to alleviate your brother's grief after returning to the spirit world? S., Axner has been working with me on an effective strategy. It's very delicate because we are with Walt's duplicate. Dr. N., you mean the dual part of Walt's energy mass that remained behind during his incarnation to Earth? S., yes, Walt and I are in the same soul group. 1. Begin by connecting myself to his divided nature here to more closely communicate with Walt's light on Earth. Dr. N., please explain this procedure. S., I float next to the cache where his remaining energy is anchored and meld with it briefly. This allows for a perfect recording of Walt's energy imprint. There is already a telepathic bonding between us, but I want to have a tighter vibrational alliance when I reach his bedside. Dr. N., why do you wish to carry an absolutely accurate print of Walt's energy pattern with you on your return to Earth? S., for a stronger connection to the dreams I will create. Dr. N., but why can't Walt's other half communicate with himself on Earth instead of you? S., sharply, this does not work well. It is nothing more than talking to oneself. There is no impact, especially during sleep. It's a washout. Dr. N., all right, Since Walt's exact energy print is with you, what happens when you go to his sleeping body? S. He is tossing and turning at night and really suffering a lot over my being killed. Axina trained me to work between dreams because he does these energy transfers so well himself. Dr. N. You work between dreams? S. Yes, so I can leave messages on either side of two different dreams and then link them for greater receptivity. Because I have Walt's exact energy imprint, I slip into his mind quite easily to deploy my energy. After my visit, a third dream about the first two unfolds as a delayed reaction and Walt sees us together again in an out-of-body setting, which he won't recognize as the spirit world, but the activation of these inviting memories will sustain him. Note, some cultures, such as the Tibetan mystics, believe they do recognize the spirit world as an almost physical paradise to be a natural part of dreaming. Dr. N., what were the dreams you created? S. Walt was 3 years older, yet we played a lot together as boys. This changed when he was 13, not because we weren't still close as brothers, he just became attached to guys his own age and I was excluded. One day Walt and his friends were swinging on a rope tied over the branch of a big tree high above a pond near our farm. I was nearby, watching. The other boys went first and were engaged in a water fight when Walt swung too high and hit his head hard on another branch and was almost knocked out as he fell into the water. They did not see him fall. I dove into the pond and held up his head screaming for help. Later, on the bank, Walt looked up at me with a dazed expression and said, "Thanks for saving me, buddy." I thought this act would admit me to their club, but a few weeks afterwards Walt and his friends would not let me play a game of softball with them. I felt betrayed that Walt would not stand up for us. During the game the ball was hit into some bushes and they couldn't locate it. That evening T found their ball and hid it inside our barn. We were poor kids and this ruined their game for a while until one of the boys got another ball on his birthday. Dr. N. Tell me the message you wanted to convey to Walt. S. To show two things. I wanted my brother to see me crying and holding his bleeding head in my lap on the bank of the pond and remember what we said to each other after he stopped choking. The second dream about the softball game ended when I added a trailer to the dream and took him to the barn where the softball was still hidden. I told Walt I forgave him for every slight in our lives together. I want him to know I am always with him and the devotion we have for each other can't die. He will know this when he returns to the old barn to look for the ball. Dr. N., does Walt need to dream again about all this after your visit? S. Laughs, it's not necessary as long as he recalled the location of the ball after he woke. Walt did remember what one had implanted. Going back to our old barn and finding the ball made the message come together. This gave Walt some serenity about my death. Dream symbolism moves on many levels in the mind, some of which are abstract while others are emotional. The dreams of this case, involving experiential imagery, reinforced poignant memories of two brothers in a slice of recorded time. Future unification was pictured for Walt in a third, rather wispy dream of both souls happily together once again in the spirit world. It took me quite a long while before I found an advanced subject apprentice to a Dreammaster, a title one feel is appropriate for Axina in case 6. As with any spiritual technique, some souls show more inclination than others toward acquiring advanced skills. In case 6, but not only originated a sequence of dreams in Walt's mind but then engaged in the more complex technique of linking them into a central theme of love and support for his brother. Finally, Bud provided physical evidence that he was there through the use of a hidden baseball. I take nothing away from Sylvia in case 5, because she was very effective entering her mother's dream to give her peace without disruption to the dreamer. It's just that case 6 demonstrated more spiritual artistry. Transference through children. When souls have difficulty reaching the mind of a troubled adult, they might resort to using children as conduits for their messages. Children are more receptive to spirits because they have not been conditioned to doubt or resist the supernatural. Frequently the young person chosen as a conduit is a family member of the departed. This situation is helpful to the spirit who is trying to reach a surviving relative, especially in the same household. The next case is that of a man who died of a heart attack in his backyard at age 42. Case 7. Dr. N. What do you do to comfort your wife at the moment of death? S. At first I try to hug Irene with my energy, but I don't have the hang of it yet. Subject is a level 2. I can relate to her sorrow, but nothing I'm doing is working. I'm worried because I don't want to leave without saying goodbye. Dr. N. Lust, relax now and move slowly forward. I want you to explain to me how you work through this dilemma. S. I soon realize that one ought to be able to console Irene a little by reaching her through Sarah, our 10-year-old. Dr. N. Why do you think Sarah might be receptive to you? S. My daughter and I have a special bond. She also has great sorrow over my passing, but much of this is mixed with fear over what happened to me so suddenly. Sarah doesn't comprehend it all yet. There are too many neighbors crowding around trying to sustain my wife. No one is paying much attention to Sarah, sitting alone in our bedroom. Dr. N. Do you look upon this as an opportunity? S. Yes, I do. In fact, Sarah senses I am still alive, and so she is more open to accepting my vibrations as I move into the bedroom. Dr. N. Good. What happens next between you and your daughter? S. Takes a deep breath. I've got it. Sarah is holding a set of her mother's knitting needles. I send warmth through them into her hands and she feels this right away. Then I use the needles as a springboard to reach her spine at the base of the neck and work around to her chin. Subject stops and begins laughing. Dr. N. What is making you happy? S. Sarah is giggling because I am tickling her chin like I did before she went to sleep every night. Dr. N. Now what do you do? S. The crowd is breaking up and leaving because I have been taken out to the street and placed into an ambulance. Irene comes alone into the bedroom to get ready for a neighbor who will drive her to the hospital. She also wants to check on our daughter. Sarah looks up at my wife and says, "Mommy, you don't have to leave. Daddy is here with me. I know, 'cause I can feel him tickling my chin." Dr. N. And then what does your wife do? S. Irene is tearful but not crying as hard as before because she doesn't want to scare Sarah. So she hugs our daughter. Dr. N. Irene does not want to indulge in what she believes to be Sarah's fantasy about your being with her? S. Not yet, but I'm ready for Irene now. As soon as my wife holds our daughter, I jump the gap between them, sending energy flowing over both. Irene feels me too, although not as much as Sarah. They sit down on the bed and hold on to each other with their eyes closed. For a while, all three of us are alone together. Dr. N. Do you feel you have accomplished what you set out to do on this day? S. Yes, it's enough. It is time for me to leave, and I pull back away from them and float out of the house. Then I am high over the countryside and sucked up into the sky. Soon I move into bright light, where my guide comes to meet me. Contact in familiar settings. It may seem from the last case that once the departing soul has reached out and touched those who care about them, they go off to the spirit world without bothering to be near us again. There are people who don't feel a soul's presence right after death but will in the future. Survivors who have reached the acceptance stage in their grief process would find solace in knowing those they have loved are still watching over them. Yet there are those who never pick up anything. Souls don't give up easily on us. Another way spirits touch people is through environmental settings associated with their memory. These contacts are effective to minds which may be closed to all other forms of spiritual communication. The following case illustrates this method. My subject, a woman called Nancy, in her last life, died of a sudden stroke after 38 years of marriage to Charles. Her husband was stuck between the denial and anger stages of grief, and his emotions were so pent up that he could not accept help from their friends or seek outside professional counseling. As an engineer, his predominantly analytical mind rejected any spiritual approach to his loss as being unscientific. Nancy's soul had tried reaching her husband in several ways for months after the funeral. His stoic nature created such a wall around himself that Charles had not really cried since his wife's death. To overcome this obstacle, Nancy decided she could reach his inner mind through his sense of smell by connecting with an environmental setting familiar to both of them. The use of sense organs by souls complements communication with the subconscious mind. Nancy decided to use her garden, specifically a rose bush, to reach Charles. Case 8. Dr. N. Why do you think Charles is going to react to your presence through a garden? S. Because he knows I loved my garden. For him, my plants were a take it or leave it situation. He knew it gave me pleasure, but to Charles, gardening was just a lot of hard work. Frankly, he helped very little in our yard. He was too busy with his mechanical projects. Dr. N. He paid no attention, then, to your yard work. S. Not unless I drew his attention to something. I had a favorite white rose bush BVR our front door, and whenever I cut these flowers I would wave them in front of his nose and tell Charles that if this sweet scent did not affect him, then he had no romance in his soul. We used to laugh about this a lot because Charles was actually a tender lover, but outwardly you would never know it. To avoid the issue, he would tease me by saying gruffly, "These are white roses, I like red." Dr. N. So, how did you implement a plan with roses to let Charles know you are still alive and with him? S. My rose bush died from lack of attention after my death. In fact, my whole yard was in bad shape because Charles was not functioning well at all. One weekend he was walking around the garden in a daze and came near some roses belonging to our next door neighbor. He caught the smell. This is what I was waiting for, and I moved quickly into his mind. He thought of me and looked at my dead rose bush. Dr. N., you created an image of your rose bush in his mind? S. Sighs, no, he would have missed that in the beginning. Charles understands tools. I started out by getting him to picture a shovel in his mind and digging. Then we made the transition to my rose bush and the garden center in town where it could be purchased. Charles pulled out his car keys. Dr. N., you got him to walk to the car and then drive over to this nursery? S., grinning, it took persistence. But yes, I did. Dr. N., then what did you do? S., at the nursery Charles wandered around for a bit until I was able to draw him to the roses. They were only red varieties, and that suited him. I was projecting a white color in his mind, so he asked a clerk why there were no white roses. He was told red was all they had left in stock. Charles overrode my thoughts and bought a big pot of red roses, telling the clerk to deliver them to our house because he didn't want to get his car dirty. Dr. N., what do overriding thoughts mean to you? S. People under stress get impatient and fall back on established thought patterns. To Charles, the standard rose is red. That's his mindset. Since the store didn't have white roses at the moment, my husband would not deal with it further. Dr. N. So, in a sense, Charles was blocking the conflicting images between his conscious thoughts and what you were projecting in his unconscious mind? S. Yes. And also my husband is very mentally tired from my death. Dr. N., wouldn't red roses suit your purpose just as well? S., flatly, no. It was then I switched my energy to Sabine, the woman I knew who ran the store. She was at my funeral and was aware I loved white roses. Dr. N., I don't think I know where this is going, Nancy. There were no white roses. Charles bought the red roses and then left for home. Wasn't this enough for you? S. Laughing at me, you men. The white rose is me. The next morning Sabine personally drove to my house and delivered a big pot of white roses. She told my husband that she got them from another nursery and this is what I would have wanted. Then she left Charles standing bewildered in our driveway. He carried them over to the hole he had dug where my old rose bush had been and stopped. The roses were in his face. He smelled their fragrance, but what was more important, the wash of white was combined with the scent. My subject pauses tearfully as she recreates this moment. Dr. N., in a low voice, you are making all this very clear, please go on. S. Charles was, feeling my presence at last. I now spread my energy around his torso to include the roses in a symmetrical envelopment. One wanted him to smell the white roses and my essence filtering through the energy field together. Dr. N, was this effective? S, softly, finally, he knelt down next to the hole, pressing the roses to his face. Charles broke down and sobbed for a long time while I held him. When it was over, he knew I was with him still. While the spirits of husbands might use cars or sporting equipment, I find that wives often utilize garden settings to reach their mates. Another client told me about his wife applying the planting of an oak tree to make her connection. Before this widower saw me, he wrote, "Even if what happened to me was not from my wife, does it matter? The main thing is that in some way I am using the emotional energy generated by my feeling she was with me to tap into my inner resources, which previously were not available. I am no longer in an abyss without a glimmer of light." In talking with people about such experiences, which some call mystical, it is important to consider the possibility of a spiritual source. If we can feed into a highly charged state of emotion during our grief, we can both heal and learn more about our inner selves. Spirits may prefer to communicate with us in the form of ideas. Here is a quote from a letter I received from a former client about his departed wife, Gwen. "I believe our session together assisted in his discovery of the best way to receive his wife's thoughts. I have learned we don't all have equal abilities as souls to communicate with each other. Sending and receiving messages is a skill that needs to be refined with practice. I finally recognized the imprint of Gwen's thoughts after getting nothing during my meditations. She was a literary person who used word thoughts rather than pictures to generate feeling in me. I had to learn to integrate word flashes from her into my own manner of speaking, which she knows, in order to decipher what she was telling me. I see more clearly now how I can touch Gwen with my mind. Strangers as messengers." Case 9, Derek was a man in his 60s who came to see me from Canada to evaluate his life and try and resolve his greatest sadness. When he was a young man, he lost his beautiful 4-year-old daughter, Julia. Her death was sudden, unexpected and so devastating that he and his wife decided to have no more children. I placed Derek in deep hypnosis and took him to a scene following his last life where he appeared in front of his counsel. We then discovered that one of his major current life lessons was learning to cope with tragedy. Derek had been deficient in this area during his past two lives by falling apart and making life more difficult for family survivors who depended upon him. He is doing much better in his current life. What was especially interesting for me about this case was a single incident that happened to Derek some 20 years after Julia's death. Derek had recently lost his wife to cancer and was in mourning. One day, feeling very despondent, he walked to a nearby amusement park. After a while, he sat down on a bench near a carousel. Listening to the music, Derek watched the children happily going around in circles on colorful wooden animals. He saw from a distance one little girl who looked like Julia, and tears flooded his eyes. Just then a young woman of about 20 appeared and asked if she could sit down next to him. It was a warm day. She was dressed in white muslin, holding a cold drink in her hand. Derek nodded but said nothing while the woman enjoyed her drink and talked about growing up in England and coming to Canada because she was particularly attracted to Vancouver. She introduced herself as Heather, and Derek noticed a glow of sunlight around her that gave the young woman a shining, angelic quality. Time seemed to be suspended for Derek as the conversation turned to family and what Heather was going to do with her new life in Canada. Derek found himself talking to her as a father, and the more they conversed, the more he felt he knew her. Finally, Heather stood up and placed her hand tenderly on Derek's shoulder. She smiled at him and said, "I know you are worried about me, please don't be. I'm all right and it's going to be a wonderful life. We will see each other again someday, I know." Derek told me that as Heather walked away and gave him a final wave, he saw his daughter and felt at peace. During our session, Derek recognized that the reincarnated soul of Julia had come to him and provided the assurance he had not really lost her. When we suffer the absence of people we love, they may come to us in mysterious ways, often when our minds are detached in a shallow alpha state.